K-Mud Podcast presents.
Wow, super cool. Okay, so here's technology in action. Hi, Monty.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today on Wildcraft. I know it's that time of year, so I thought I better reach out and give you a chance to let us all know why we should be donating to your amazing nonprofit, Bird Ally X, and let us know what kind of animals you're seeing these days and what we can do to help.
Well, it's it's the heart of baby season. In fact, this is the obviously California is a big state. You may have heard about that. spring starts a lot earlier down south. But for us, historically, from June 15th to June 15th is our peak month, and so we're in the middle of it right now, and it's acting that way.
Can you give me some examples?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, one thing is that we did start earlier this year than usual. We've been kind of in our peak months for the last month and a half already.
Wow.
So that was
spring.
It really was. And there wasn't a lot of storms this winter either. So, I don't know how all of that, obviously plays into it. But we had a very slow January, February, March. And then at the end of April, it was like somebody turned on a switch. And we've completely caught up to all of our busy years for past. And it's been, it started with mallards and goslings and, mallard ducklings. Uh-huh. And Canada goslings and Virginia opossums as our, that's what began it for us in April. And now
it's a picture that's on your website right now, the opossum babies on the website. Is that?
Yeah. That's, and we typically treat about 200 of those guys every summer. And just to give you an idea of what this year has been like, we've already treated 170 of them.
Whoa.
And it's just now, what's today? Today's like the second day of summer.
Yeah. It's like day two. Happy summer solstice, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Happy summer solstice to you too. It's been
busy.
It has. I've been the early morning started early, and they just keep going. So it's been but it's great. And the work is of course quite satisfying. We have many owls in care this year. We have two barn owl babies, a great horned owl baby.
Wow.
And screech owl baby, and we just finished our raptor aviary too.
Wow, so, congratulations, that's super cool.
And if you build it, they will come. It's the regulations for wildlife rehabilitation changed this year, and it meant we had to build a housing that was just dedicated for skunks.
Oh, wow.
And so we managed to get that done. We finished it, the second week of May. And we already have 10 baby skunks in it.
Oh, wow.
So we're definitely, we have baby foxes in care for those guys. About an hour ago, I released over in Bayside, which is pertinent to their story, five northern flicker babies.
Awesome.
Who came to us. Yeah, and they're great. First of all, woodpeckers are just extremely fun to take care of because, especially five of them that are all siblings, it was sort of like taking care of the Marx Brothers. And we don't know where they came from.
Oh.
One of the local feed and seeds found them in a bale of hay that they had purchased for resale.
What? That's so crazy.
It was so they think he came. They think they came from Siskiyou County, but they have no idea where.
Oh,
and
I guess though.
So yeah, and we do, and that's happened for us. We've gotten barn owl babies the same way. They come down from Siskiyou in a hay bale.
Oh my goodness! I want to start buying hay from Siskiyou County just for fun now to see. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's
flickers are one of my favorites. That's so lovely. So when
I love. Yeah, we just released them today.
So when you have animals in your care, your primary goal is to rehabilitate them to get them to be free animals again. But I've been wondering to ask you, when is it I can't release this animal? Like if it's a bird and it can't fly, or if it's like a skunk that's missing an arm, like what? When do animals get to become your friends forever?
Examples. I think in my history, you know, in all the places I've worked, I think, you know, some of the most painful non-releasable animals are the ones who are physically perfect, but because of their interactions with people have been psychically injured. You know,
I can see how that's possible for sure.
A gull, say, who's raised, the people take an egg home and raise them from an egg and then realize that having a gull in their backyard isn't really cool as they thought it would be.
It's never cool to keep wild animals as pets, folks. It's just not okay to that animal. They deserve to be
it
free.
Is not.
That's like sentencing them to prison. It's not okay.
I agree completely with that.
I'm just shaming everyone out there. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Those are really distressing. But for the most part, you know, most of the animals that we deem not releasable, that happens at their intake admission.
I see.
Because, you know, if we get an adult opossum who's been hit by a car, and the universe did not end it then. You know, they come to us with, you know, a fractured skull and just a total mess, and they're not going to get better. And, you know, and so really that's our number one task, really, because, you know, half of the animals that come to us are that badly injured.
But it's always best if you find an injured animal to let someone like Monty, who's qualified, make that decision. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And not only that, but, you know, I mean, in the situation of like, you know, traumatic injury, you know, we use the word euthanasia, and that word gets used a lot. I find it especially crummy when somebody says, oh, the bear that was getting into the dumpsters of Tahoe was euthanized. And I'm like, he wasn't.
Yeah.
Because the word euthanasia means a good death.
Yeah.
And for a death to be good, it has to be good for the one doing the dying.
Right. Yep, I agree.
And, in our case, you know, for in our work, it's all every euthanasia is a good death, and it's also painless.
Thank you for doing the hard stuff too, because that has got to be really challenging to get up every day and know that might have to happen again. But then there's those wonderful moments when you get to release five flickers into the wild, and that's cool.
Well, that was fabulous, you know, and I mean, They're not our animals. You know, our patients come in and they retain their ownership of themselves. We don't own them. They're not ours. I mean, the state of California will have a different opinion. It'll say these animals belong to the state of California, which is where they get their legal authority for permitting and stuff like that. But from our perspective, we do not own them. And that said, those were my flickers.
I'm glad you got to make friends with some flickers this year. That's
wonderful. Yeah, so taking care of them was just a complete joy. And I'm super sorry that they lost their family, that they didn't want to go on a, you know, 4-hour truck ride. Yeah. If that's what happened, we don't know. But, you know, they would really rather have been raised by their parents, and their parents didn't want them to suddenly turn up missing that way.
Right.
But inside of all of that, it was a privilege to know him.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I want to make sure, because we only have until 3 o'clock to chat, I want to make sure we talk about the pertinent things that you might need from us as donors. What kind of donations do you like best? Obviously, probably money. You probably like money.
Extremely useful because, you know, you can do so many things with it. You can buy raccoon formula and you can pay the electric bill.
There you go.
You know, it's really useful in that regard. And this is the time of year when, you know, donations are at their lowest and our need is at its highest.
So Monty, if someone wanted to donate to you, but they were also really curious, are they allowed to come visit you over there and see your new raptor its enclosure or anything like that? Is that an okay thing to do if somebody wanted to come say hi? Can they see anybody while they're there?
Well, our permit and the California rods we are not allowed to display any of our patients.
Oh, interesting.
And I also regard it as kind of like, you know, a patient's bill of rights. You know, you don't really want anybody coming into your hospital room.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, just wanted to see how things were here. Oh, look, they admit people like you.
Yeah, look at that person, and that's what they look like. I see.
That's true. But on the other hand, anything that is not putting our patients on display, like if we have a new housing that we're real super proud of and it doesn't happen to have anybody in it, I'd be happy to, you know, give people a little, you know, show them around, you know, guided through the process. That's terrific. And if they want to drop off a donation, that's also really, that's pretty acceptable behavior in our neighborhood. And there's other things that, you know, we first of all, we need volunteers, and we always do. So if you're in the Humboldt Bay area, or you don't mind driving up once a week from, we've had volunteers from SoHum before.
Oh, yeah.
Who I would come up once a week for a 4-hour shift.
Uh-huh.
And, when you start volunteering, it really, you know, your level of education that you want in doing animal care that's up to you. You know, you can come fold towels and you're going to be a lifesaver that day.
Right,
you know, just folding towels is important work. Housekeeping is animal care. But if you want more than that's available. You know, cool. every staff person I know in this field began as a volunteer somewhere.
Yeah, right on. So I'm going to guess that because you just mentioned towels, that you're always looking for donations of towels and bed sheets too, right?
Yeah, flat sheets, pillowcases, towels, hand towels, those things are always useful. And we go through them. Because once something has a hole in it, we can't really use it because an animal could get, you know, tangled in it.
Yeah,
so we don't, you know, so we go through things a lot. We do.
So
I have my favorite sheets that we have right now, though.
What's that?
I have my favorite sheets. This sheet's clean. Yay, I'm going to use this one.
I love the one with the little birds on it. Okay, I see.
Well, the forest theme ones have gone under the barn owls for the past month and a half.
Awesome. Okay, folks, keep that in mind. If you want to donate sheets, it's always more fun if they have cute designs. Getting back to the animals that you get to work with in rescue and release, I would say, with the flickers, like, what's an average diet for a baby flicker? Are you like hand feeding them with a little tweezer, little maggots or something? Like, what are you doing there?
Well, those guys are quite voracious. The most common insect that we feed out to all of the insectivore birds, which is almost all baby birds are fed insects by their parents. Uh-huh. Only the finches aren't.
Oh.
So for finches, house finches, goldfinches, whatever, we feed, it's basically a store-bought preparation that is basically, you know, a milkshake of seeds.
I see.
And we squeeze it out of a syringe right into their mouth. We have 5 house finches right now. Feeding them is a blast because they like it. They come, as long as they need to be fed, they come to you to be fed. And the minute that they don't, they stop, and it's fabulous. They do that, but you know, but the flickers we were feeding mostly mealworms, and we buy those from a place in Southern California in boxes of 10 or 20,000.
Wow. Okay.
And the flickers at every feeding, each one of them ate about 100 of those mealworms.
Wow.
Like I would use hemostat to feed them. So I would just grab a bunch of mealworms in my hemostat. I could get about 20, 25 in a grab.
Okay.
And like literally 4 mouthfuls. So eating it was great, but it was also great financially. When your kids go off to college and you don't have to give them breakfast anymore.
Yeah, I'm about to go through that one, actually. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm still buying groceries for my graduated teenager, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this grocery bill is going to be cut in half when he leaves for college.
Yes,
I hear you.
it's one of the hidden benefits if your kid's getting old.
So what do baby opossums eat?
They eat a little bit of everything. We have a certain diet that we make for just about all of the omnivores, which includes crows. Crows and opossums eat pretty, we feed them pretty much the same thing, and that's mealworms and lots of them. Eggs, cooked eggs.
Oh, you feed
Raw
eggs to birds?
eggs, but raw eggs, you cannot buy raw eggs that, it's hard to get raw eggs that aren't salmonella risk.
Oh, wow.
Because everybody cleans their eggs, and so it's just the way it is now. So modern eggs, we cook them, and blueberries are big because I can buy big bags of those frozen, and almost everybody gets squash, and that for us, that's the easy squash to give is zucchini.
Yeah, because it grows so prevalently.
Yeah, and it's usually relatively inexpensive. It's rarely more than $3.99 a pound. It's not, I never more than $3.99 a pound.
Do
Right now
you
it's $3.29 a pound.
ever take or want donations of food? Do you want people to
Oh
bring you
yeah.
zucchinis?
People do, especially, because I think for the most part, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I'm not a zucchini expert, but I think the larger the zucchini, the less it is considered desirable to eat.
Yes, that's true.
The raccoons don't care.
Okay, so growing big for the raccoons. Good to know.
Yeah, so all the mammals get zucchini, and all of the omnivorous birds, like basically all the corvids, get
Cool,
zucchini.
cool.
And let's see, what else do we feed in there? Oh, fish.
Oh.
Fish is a, first of all, it's a relatively, we can get fish relatively inexpensively, $2, $3 a pound, in frozen boxes of 25 pound, frozen 25 pound boxes. And even for guys who aren't going to necessarily be eating fish, like an opossum, say, isn't going, may or, an opossum will get fish if they find it laying around on the street.
Yeah, it seems like opossums will eat anything, pretty much, right?
Yeah, they will. But like raccoons will actually get fish out of the streams.
I learned that raccoons have a heat sensor in their hand and they can feel a fish underwater as it's going by and grab it. David Attenborough taught me that. It's got to be true.
Yeah.
I just think that's amazing. Raccoons are so underestimated. Everybody's like, darn those raccoons, but they're really so precious. I love those animals. They look like they're wearing
Well, I
little
adore them.
bandit pajamas.
Yeah, they're maligned, and people call them trash pandas and stuff like that. But when people malign an animal for utilizing trash, they should remember which is the mammal that put that trash there.
That's right. That's right. They wouldn't be in your trash if you didn't have food in your trash can. That's you should be cleaning everything out better. Raccoons are just telling you to do a better job with your own garbage. That's the real truth.
That's basically I yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love raccoons, and they're super smart, and like many smart animals, they stay young a long time.
Oh, interesting.
We get a baby raccoon in, and we have them for nearly half a year.
Wow.
Whereas like opossums turn around in a couple months.
Oh. When you release wild animals, do you have to always take them to somewhere different because of territory problems and stuff like that, or does it depend on the animal?
Well, it really depends on the animal. For the most part, we try to we in fact we're bound to by the terms of our permit, but we put them back where pretty much where they were found, unless where they were found is stupid.
Like in a
right
hay bale.
right or you wouldn't put a spill victim back in the oil spill,
Of course not. Yeah. Yeah.
right? So there's a lot of common sense workarounds for that particular thing, but for the most part, we release guys where they were found. And with songbirds, that's kind of important because dialects change from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Oh, that's super interesting.
So we want to make sure we're putting them back, especially if they came to us like they were already 2 weeks old, say. That means they've been listening to their neighborhood for 2 weeks. That's already in their head.
Sure,
So we
that's
want
a
to put
long
them.
time for a bird, right?
It is. It's
Yeah.
half their childhood.
I can imagine that's a long time for a bird.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, you know, we definitely take that into consideration. And, you know, release site suitability is also something, you know, like raccoons that come out from under somebody's house in a neighborhood in Eureka, we're just not going to put them back in that neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
Because there's just, it's that's almost like putting the spill victim back in the oil spill.
Yeah, but you're going to put them somewhere in Eureka.
Yeah, and someplace where they have a fighting chance at living a life that isn't dependent on trash cans.
There you go. Love it. That's awesome. So if there was a couple things that you would like to tell the audience that maybe that I heard you say, one, you can always use cash. Two, you're always looking for sheets and pillowcases and towels. Three, there's always ways to volunteer. So if there's any high schoolers out there looking to fulfill their hours for volunteering, can high schoolers volunteer with you?
You have to be 18.
Oh, you have to be 18. Okay.
Yeah,
so
that's our insurance regulations talking there.
That's okay. So you have to volunteer out of the kindness of your heart, which is why you should volunteer anyway.
Well, and you know, college students, we have this, you know, every place I've worked all over the West Coast, and every place I've worked, it's me and the woman whose children have gone to college.
Oh, well, then I'll see you next year.
They've left home, and now somebody, they have time on their hands to do things they want to do. And here at this facility, it's me and the college kids.
Uh-huh.
It's so, nobody gets my jokes. I mean, it's great. They're great. And, you know, but like, there's a lot of opportunities for college students to internships and, you know, just getting some volunteer experience. Because, like, you know, Cal Poly is a very big wildlife school.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so we get a lot of wildlife students who are looking to fulfill some other aspect that their education doesn't otherwise provide.
Right on. So in our last couple of minutes here, do you have any really intriguing stories for us, maybe about a super weird animal that you got to rescue and release, or a quirky story about an animal you'll just never forget, anything like that you want to share today?
Well, the first thing that came to mind, I may as well go with it, is we did get a porcupine from Crescent City.
I love porcupines. And
a couple of things about porcupines. One is, if you find an injured porcupine, please don't throw a towel or a sheet over them.
Good to know.
Because all those quills get stuck in it, and there's only one way that, and then the quills come out when that comes off, and then it's just not that, it's, you know, it'd be better to, you know, using like pieces of plywood, you know, herd them into a trash can or a dog crate or something like that, but just don't cover them. So like that's happened to two out of the three porcupines we've cared for in the last 10 years. Two of them had their quills taken out by the towel that somebody threw over them.
Dang. Well,
so was that. This guy was,
Oh, shucks, you guys. I don't know what happened. I'm so sad to say that Monty is now gone from my screen, and I apologize to all of you. I'm not sure what happened, but I do want to let you know that I did do a show about porcupines a little while back. If you missed it, I think it's in the K-Mud podcasts that you can find on your favorite podcatcher. And in case you don't do podcasts, I recommend you look up information about porcupines and find Teddy the Porcupine on YouTube, because he's amazing. And you will learn that porcupines totally sound like they're speaking English. It's absolutely amazing. Dang, I'm so sorry we just lost Monty. That is one of the sadnesses that comes with technology, I guess, when we don't have people join us down in the studio, which, of course, Monty doesn't have enough free time with all those animals he's rescuing to run down to Southern Humble. But, you know, Monty also has his own podcast that you can find if you type Bird LIX into your favorite podcatcher. Monty goes on some interesting deep dives about the work that he does, and you can find his podcast, too, online if you would like. And also, Bird Ally X and Humboldt Bay Wildlife Rescue are both the same company. That's Monty's nonprofit, Monty Merrick. Thank you so much for joining us today, Monty. It was so close to o'clock anyway, that I'm just going to roll with it, and I will apologize to him later. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today with Monty Merrick from Bird Ally X. And don't forget that if you find an injured animal in Del Norte, Humboldt, even Mendocino County, and Trinity and Siskiyou, like, Monty's group, Bird Ally X, is one of the only rescuers around here that can rehab animals and release them. So feel free to reach out to them, and they will sometimes meet you halfway. If you're, like, let's say you're in Leggett and you found a skunk that's been injured, they would probably meet you somewhere on the 101 and take that from you and teach you how to safely get it to them if they can't get all the way down there themselves. So there's lots of ways that you can help, including monetarily or with some donated sheets and towels. And thank you to Monty and everyone over there at Bird Ally X for taking care of the little guys out there. I love that we got to hear that story about those flickers who may or may not have traveled all the way from Siskiyou County in a hay bale. You never know when you're going to find wild.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.